Hey, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to this week's message. My name's Aaron, and I'm on the staff team here at Eastlake. Everything we do around here depends on the generous donations of our local and online community, people just like you, who tune into these messages and see great benefit from living that idea that life is a gift and love is the point. So if you love what Eastlake is up to, we'd encourage you to contribute by going to eastlakecc.com. With that, let's jump into this week's message. Today, we hear from Ryan Meeks as he kicks off our new series, The Crisis and the Miracle.
Well, hey, everybody. My name is Ryan, and I hope wherever this service finds you today, you are healthy and making it through this crazy season that we're in right now. I have been spending a lot of time trying to figure out how to make this camera work. I kicked my entire family out of the house. So that I could have a quiet place to film, and then have pretty much just been spending the whole time trying to get the camera right. So it's probably time to start doing the talk. We are starting a brand new series right now. We had been in a series on the Enneagram, which we started towards the beginning of the year, and it was awesome. And then I think we got to about week three and had to start, not having public services. So we've been going through the Enneagram from different people's homes. And I want to say thanks to everybody who participated in that series. It was so great to hear each number speak on their perspective and on the Enneagram, how to get along with each other and how to work with each other and be into intimate relationships. And I just found it really enriching. So thanks. It was fun to follow along with what you guys are doing. My family and I moved down to Encinitas, California at the beginning of January, and we had some amazing plans for this year. And then, I don't know what happened in your world, but in my world, everything kind of flipped upside down in March. I mean, our plans went out the window, and the kids stopped going to school, and they're here all the time with us in the house. So it has, it's created some challenges. And what we want to do over the next couple weeks, today I'm just going to sort of tee up what we're going to be talking about throughout the series. And then Kent Dobson, who I know you know and love, and Kristen Birchenall and Bruce Sanguin are all going to take an opportunity to speak to this as well. But if I haven't said it yet, the name of the series that we're in is called The Crisis and the Miracle. And it's probably obvious we're going to be talking about what we're all going through. And I think, at the end of the day, isn't that kind of why you tune into these things anyway? I mean, why would you? There's a lot of video content on the internet, and frankly, I mean, Netflix has better production stuff on there than what we're putting out. I think the reason that something draws us to, religious services or spiritual communities like Eastlake is that we're looking for ways to be ensouled, to be living in spirit, or maybe a non-religious way to say that would be live in our values in the middle of chaos, right? Because especially when things get stressful, you know, churches tend to fill up on, the weekends after a disaster. In times like that we're facing right now, you know, people will be seeking spiritual guidance and a sense of like, how do we make sense of this? And I actually think that can create problems just as much as it can create solutions. You know, we humans have such an addiction to certainty because it's scary to live without closure. It's scary to live without conclusions, you know? And this is why conspiracy theories get really popular at a time like this, because rather than living in the ambiguity, in the dark, in the unknowing of everything, companies and governments and different, cults will be pushing certainty. Like, okay, we know what's going on. And because people are scared, it's really appealing. Whether it's wrapped up in a huge bag of irrational assumptions really doesn't matter that much if people are at an emotional place where they need something to tether them, to calm them down. And so, I guess at the outset of this, even though I really can't say I know what's going on, and here's what's happening, and here's how it's going to go down. I do think that many of the spiritual traditions that come to us throughout human history have a lot of guidance for us. And how do you live well when things seem to be unraveling? In fact, I think Jesus specifically seemed to speak really well to that. I mean, here he is, a Jew in the first century under the occupation of the Roman Empire, and it feels like their whole way of life was at risk. There was like constant warfare and violence all around, unjust economic policies. I mean, it should sound like pretty familiar to us. And yet in the middle of all of that, here's this teacher, this rabbi who comes out and says, like, there's a way to live in integrity with reality, or his language was with the Father, in the midst of all this, from this group of powerless people under the boot of a massive empire, this guy's saying there's a different way to go. There's a kingdom, that's his language. There's a way to be in the world, a consciousness, if you will, that is aligned with ultimate truth, with the absolute. Again, his word would be the Father or God, that you can access in the middle of all of this. And I think that's what we're looking for. I mean, that's what we're all needing at this time, is to know, how do I sort of sink my roots in? How do I tether into something that can ground me, that can hold me fast to the mast in the middle of this storm? And so I think it's important just to throw that out as a cautionary tale, that because we have that deep need, it's easy to latch on to the answers. And, you know, every news station and every political persuasion is going to try to put forward conclusive, we understand what's going on, they don't statements, because people want those. But I really think it's an important time to live admitting that we don't actually know. We don't know where this virus is headed. We don't know how long it's going to hang around. We don't know if quarantine's going to go on and on. And I know people love to get like super inspired, and I would love to offer you that, but I don't want to offer you bullshit. Like, we may not start school again in the fall, or maybe things will open back up and then the virus will get much worse. We don't know. And I think part of what's ours to bear right now is the unknowing, is to not know how long this is going, and to sort of face the fact that we're all longing to go back to normal in a sense, whatever that means for you, like a sense of stability, or just having a little bit more sense of control over your life. But there's a deep gift in all of that. And really, that's the other part of what the series is going to be about, the miracle, right? The idea that, and when I say miracle, I don't mean like, you know, growing back a cut off limb or raising somebody from the dead. I'm actually talking about the innovations that come online through crisis. You know, you may have heard the old axiom, no mud, no lotus, you know, no pressure, no diamond, no struggle, no transformation. Or in evolutionary terms, you could say, no crisis, no evolution. And so here we are. And we can look even at evolution's own history and see that it's in these massive die-off moments, even these crises of life, where innovation moves it forward. I mean, there's a time in Earth's history where the Earth was toxic with oxygen, and a dominant species of bacteria was eradicated by this, and life found a way to adapt to this and keep moving forward. And I think that's important to remember, that inherent in the crisis itself is the innovation, the solution, the way to move forward. It may not look like the old world. It may not look like normal. We may never be going back to normal. But the truth is, before March of 2020, there were a lot of things that weren't working already. And there's a real gift in all of this. And that's really, a lot of teachers talk about that in Awakening, that awakening can, we can sort of fool ourselves into thinking it's this like wonderful experience. But really coming to higher and higher levels of awareness require the letting go of so much other garbage that's in the way. Jesus said it, you know, that you have to go through the eye of the needle, this idea that, that you can't take all of this with you where you're headed to get to a new place. I think it was St. John of the Cross, he said something to the effect of, to come by knowledge you have not, you must go by the way you know not, something like that. Again, the same idea, that there's a solution, that there's a bridge we must cross in times of crisis. And in order to cross that bridge in many ways, there's sort of an unraveling or a setting down of baggage, a leaving things behind, a severance of sorts. Adi Shanti had grabbed this quote earlier. He says this, and I think I've shared this quote with you before. Make no mistake about it, enlightenment is a destructive process. It has nothing to do with becoming better or happier. Enlightenment is the crumbling away of untruth. Let me read that sentence again. Enlightenment is the crumbling away of untruth. Things, feels like things are crumbling right now. He goes on, it's seeing through the facade of pretense. It's the complete eradication of everything we imaged to be true.
Well, hey everyone, excuse the interruption for a quick minute. My name is Kristen. I'm one of the team members here at Eastlake, and we're so glad that you're joining us today on the podcast. It's been so encouraging for us to hear stories from people all over the country and the world who are listening to these messages and resonating with this idea that we just keep saying over and over again, which is life is a gift and love is the point, and that we are all committed to being a beneficial presence in our own community. So thanks for joining us. I hope that that's resonating with you. It's just really fun for us. So wanted to also say thank you to those of you who contribute. This place, all of these things that we do are happening because of people who make consistent, even just small consistent gifts. It helps us plan. It helps us know that there are really people behind us who want this thing to continue. So thank you to those of you who do that. If you haven't had a chance to give yet, I would encourage you to maybe think about doing that if you find this beneficial in your own life. To make a contribution, it's really easy. You can go to eastlakecc.com and there's a donate button there with all the info. So thanks so much for tuning in. Let's get back to the message.
I really do believe that what's happening right now is an opportunity for a collective waking up. I don't think that it's some sort of like fortune teller-y 2012 Mayan calendar moment where everyone's going to awaken, and this is, I think this is just an opportunity in the midst of crisis for people to awaken. And it's not a guaranteed going to happen thing. But that this sort of, what people are calling this, the great pause or the global Sabbath, that we have been forced to sit down and face ourselves in many ways and to be quiet and to get out of our normal routines, that this is an opportunity. Now, before somebody's like, this is a horrible thing and people are dying. Oh, I get that. And that's terrible. But if that's all we're allowed to say at this time, we're missing the opportunity inherent in the crisis itself. Like, yes, it's terrible. And let's take as much time as we need, and it'll be different for all of us based on our circumstances. We're all handling this differently. And one of the weeks of this series, specifically when Kristen speaks, will be about dealing with our feelings and our emotions. But what I'm trying to communicate is that if we're going to go on living, which I highly recommend, then we need to make the most of this opportunity. You know, I understand the motivation behind everybody, you know, trying to say, you know, you're doing quarantine your way and all that. And I think I probably agree. I don't, you know, it takes more teasing out to know what each person means when they say stuff like that. But I do want to say there's a way to do quarantine wrong. We have some significant problems on the planet that are social problems. There are problems about the way we organize. We have a significant ecological crisis at hand before we even begin to deal with COVID. And I think that the wrong way to deal with this quarantine time is to numb, you know, to run away from the problem, to take our feelings and emotions and inflict them on others. Like, I think we need to face what's going on and embrace the opportunity to learn. We're here, I believe, to learn and evolve and grow. And if we don't take the time to do that, to in this class that we're in, to learn these lessons, then we've missed it. And so it's going to be different lessons for different people because we have different life circumstances. But if you don't take the time that you are afforded, whatever time that is, based on your situation, to learn the lessons, to be self-reflective, to contemplate our global situation in light of a certainly big history and a cosmic history, and then asking yourself if you're living in integrity with your own values, then we're missing it. This is an opportunity. There's a miracle in the crisis. Breakthroughs come from our breakdowns. I think it was Marianne Williamson who says it another way, like nervous breakdowns are highly underrated shortcuts to awakening or something like that. I agree. The poet David White has said something to the effect of, he's talking about your own house burned to ashes so that the road could open again. Like, there's this deep loss, and yet so that the road could open again. Like, there's an opportunity here in the midst of this stuff. It may not be what we wanted, but it may be what we needed. You know, it's this blankie that we've been holding on to, life as we know it, right? My senior year going the way I wanted it to, right? But what if your senior year falling apart, or the job you need going away, or this, you know, issue, health issue that could be, you could be struggling with right now. Perhaps you're even listening to this at a hospital, I don't know. Maybe this is the thing, that the hinge point that changes your life, that moves you forward. Breakthroughs come from breakdowns. And Jesus talked about, this is just one of the many things that made him seem like such an incendiary character. He called blessed all the things we spend our lives trying to avoid, right? Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are those who are poor in spirit. When you feel like you're at the end of it, I mean, I think a lot of people right now are feeling very poor in spirit. And yet the teachings of Jesus are like, hey, you're lucky. You're blessed. Like, things are going well for you because you now have access to something. What? Well, it's going to be easier to let go of stuff that you can't hang on to anyway, and to move through that eye of the needle, to move forward in the middle of the crisis, to see the miracle, and to make the change, to let go of the thing that's holding you back, and to continue to evolve. I wanted to read this line. This is a great book by Michael Mead called Awakening of the Soul, and he says this: change is the essence of life. But as people face great changes and an unknown future, they tend to become fearful. As fear spreads, most try to cling to something familiar and try to control things in order to reduce the terror of being overwhelmed. Does that sound familiar or what? Yet the overwhelming lesson of history on both collective and individual levels is that closing down and holding tight to familiar things does not work. So, I feel like I'm circling my point round and round. Let me try to bring clarity. Here's what I'm trying to say to you. And it might be a little bit offensive even. But we don't know what is a good thing and what is a bad thing. Now, there's plenty of science out there and studies, psychological studies, that show us that we're actually horrible predictors of what would make us happy. I mean, if you're over 40, you know this really well. Like, things you planned, like, I'm going to do this when you're 22, and then later when you're 40, you're like, I don't even like this, you know? We're terrible at predicting what future us would even want or what would make us happy. It's also true that we're just not sure in the moment whether something that's happening to us is the best thing that ever happened or not. I mean, when I got cancer, I was real bummed, to put it lightly. And I look back on that experience as one of the most important, clarifying, values-centrating moments of my life, where I was forced to let go of a whole bunch of stuff I was still hanging on to that was no longer serving me. I had to start taking my body and its health seriously. I never had done that in my whole life. So there's this sort of delusion that we know whether things are good or bad. And I want to show you this. I've told you this parable before, but I found a video of it with Alan Watts' voice telling it. So check out this Taoist parable.
Once upon a time, there was a Chinese farmer who lost a horse, ran away. And all the neighbors came round that evening and said, "That's too bad." And he said, "Maybe." The next day, the horse came back and brought 7 wild horses with it. And all the neighbors came around and said, "Why, that's great, isn't it?" And he said, "Maybe." The next day, his son was attempting to tame one of these horses and was riding it and was thrown and broke his leg. And all the neighbors came round in the evening and said, "Well, that's too bad, isn't it?" And the farmer said, "Maybe." And the next day, the conscription officers came around looking for people for the army, and they rejected his son because he had a broken leg. And all the neighbors came round that evening and said, "Isn't that wonderful?" And he said, "Maybe." The whole process of nature is an integrated process of immense complexity, and it is really impossible to tell whether anything that happens in it is good or bad, because you never know what will be the consequences of a misfortune, or you never know what will be the consequences of good fortune.
Isn't that a great parable? I love it. It's fun to hear it from Alan Watts, too. But you get the idea that we don't know. Maybe yes, maybe no. We don't know whether this is a good thing or a bad thing. And if you can sort of settle into that awareness that, like, as things are unraveling, as we're wrapped up in all that change, just like we read from Michael Mead, there can be a peace that comes online when we remind ourselves, like, you don't know, just because in that moment it seems like a negative thing or a positive thing, that it is. And we can sort of find some peace and some rest in that. Especially the older you get, you can take some time to reflect on your own life and go back and see if the things that weren't horrible in that moment ending up being good things, and then good things, "Oh yes, I got what I wanted," ended up being bad things. And if you can see that at work in your past, it can help us deal with a chaotic and perhaps disappointing present. So, the first point I'm trying to get across is, as we begin in this new series, The Crisis and the Miracle, that what I want you to understand is that they're not separate moments. Like, this is a soup. The crisis and the miracle are one. They're always one. And that part of moving through this stressful season is to bring that consciousness, that the yin and the yang of that reality together, so that we can find peace. The second thing is that I really think that it's a rebonding, a reorganizing, and a reimagining of how we gather, communicate, and structure ourselves as a human society. Now, that is a huge thing to suggest that we need to, you know, redo, but we do. And I think that this is an incredible time for us to rethink that. Now, that may not come to full fruition in this generation, but it's certainly a wonderful time to start planting seeds about how we want to reorganize ourselves. First of all, at the individual level, how do I want to reimagine my own life? Am I living in line with my values? What are my values? Like, these are the moments to be rethinking these things, to course correct, to find true north, and then begin charting our direction from there. But we really got to figure out how we're going to work together as a collective species. If COVID has taught us anything, is that hey, it's true. What physics has been telling us, what the biosphere, nature itself has been telling us for a long time, we are connected. And the well-being of someone I've never met on the other side of the world is connected to my well-being. And so we've got to look at ways to coordinate. You know, it makes me think of the metaphor of a telescope. You know, what allows a telescope to bring the distant planet Saturn into a place where I can view it in all of its beauty is these individual component lenses working together in their uniqueness to bring that forward. And certainly that's what's called for at this time. You know, there's a crisis of trust in our world. That was true before COVID, certainly. It was been true during this entire presidency. And frankly, I wasn't really that trusting of presidents before this. So we've had an issue for a while, really. I think it's been, forever, obviously. But really since the 60s, we've charted it, actually, that public trust in institutions has been going down. And of course, all these sort of privatized, politicized news outlets where you can get the news for you, you know, in your particular favorite slant, it's now so extreme that there's this crisis of trust. And then, of course, what used to be these localized communities, the internet has brought us a lot of good things, but also right now, as I'm sure we're finding out, we don't know our neighbors. And so there's something about this time right now, which I believe is an opportunity to get back to work building trust, which is really connected to social capital, which translates into healthy communities, you know, even just human longevity, healthy communities. So I want to sort of end by suggesting to you that a huge part of us getting through this and being able to reorganize ourselves and to reimagine a world that functions properly for the common good is going to be about building trust. And so how do we build trust? One, trust. You need to start trusting others, asking for help when you need it, and then be trustworthy. You know, be the kind of person that can be counted on. Offer to be the kind of person to be counted on, showing up for your neighbors and friends and family in ways that are, of course, socially responsible with distancing and whatnot. But it is, I think, a primary importance that in this time we build trust. Because as trust continues to get eroded, and less we communicate and work together, the more suspicious we get of one another, the more isolated we become, and violence and division ensue. These are the kinds of things that, you know, get us to a place where genocides and ridiculous bombings and drone wars, we don't need any more of this nonsense. It's time. This is a global wake-up call for us to reimagine ourselves, what it means to be human in the universe, and then what it means to be human with the people across the street from us. I want to end by reading to you from this. This is a prayer book. It's called Prayers to an Evolutionary God. And I had posted, I don't particularly pray a lot, at least not in a theistic way anymore, where I imagine there's a God who sort of is pulling the strings out there, and I need to petition for this God to do good things. That doesn't really function for me anymore in my worldview. But when it says Creator Spirit or Holy God or even just Mystery, which uses that language, you know, you could, if that language is bothersome to you, you could just replace it with, you know, whatever, the Tao or the Force or, you know, the singularity that gave birth to complexity. But I do believe that prayer in the sense of bringing forth our inner truth, what we're feeling, does help. And I find this to be a beautiful prayer. So let me leave us with this. How utterly mysterious, Creator Spirit, in this existence you have placed us in. If we were to despair of understanding it at all, we could feel justified. Conflict and tragedy, pain and death surround us. But so does every kind of love, with beauty and wisdom in the makeup of every tree and star. Astonishing evolutionary forces are measurably at work, and there is evidence of genuine altruism among humans. In addition, we find your own mysterious ways gracious and surprising. Be with us in making sense of it all, in keeping up our trust against so many counter signs, that beneath everything is meaning, direction, and promise. Amen. I hope you have a better week than last week, successively, and that you find ways to live as a beneficial presence in the world by building trust and being trustworthy. Be well.